I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's shift gears and bring in our friend John McClain, the general, who joins us each and every week in the 8 o'clock hour. Download the Radio.com app so you can listen to John McClain and bring him with you during this hour. Wherever you go, or on any of the other shows, In the Loop and Clint Stirner in the show. John, welcome in. How are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. Getting ready to go to rainy Kansas City.
Yeah, what are your travel plans, John? You heading there today? You heading there on game day? What's the deal?
No, I'm headed there this morning, and I'm eager to get up there and just get the vibes of the city. It's always great. They have the biggest tailgating of any team in the league. Ordinarily, they use the parking lots for Arrowhead Stadium and then the base where the Royals play next door. And even when you go 4 hours early like I do, it's always a mess to get in. So it's going to be fun to go when they only have 17,000 fans there.
John, you mentioned something there we have not touched on. I don't know, Brian was asked about it yesterday. What is the weather report for up in Kansas City? Is it supposed to be sloppy weather tomorrow night?
Yes, it is. It's been raining all week. Rain is forecast for tomorrow as well. The high tomorrow is going to be 61. The low is supposed to be 58. And so two teams that depend on wide receivers as much as they do, and the passing game, I think it doesn't hurt them unless the ball's wet, but it sure hurts the guys trying to cover them because they slip a lot. So Texas practiced one day this week in the rain, so O'Brien said that was good, but, you know, they've played in all kind of conditions. At least it's not going to be cold like it was in January.
John, the Texans obviously will be the first NFL team to travel under the new restrictions, and it seems by this point there have been so many restrictions during training camp that I wouldn't imagine it would be a big deal, but I'd also guess that the NFL is probably going to be monitoring all of this pretty closely. Have they given you a whole lot of guidance about all this?
Teams have been given 40 pages of travel protocols. They'll be better off traveling than they are at home because the guys can't go out. They're not supposed to go out anyway. The only thing that I've seen that's a bigger deal, because they have to social distance on the buses from they park here at the stadium and then they go to the airport, and they need more buses because they have to be farther apart. The plane, they can do it anyway. And so from the time the player leaves his house until the time he gets home, which would be probably about 3 or 4 in the morning, the day after the game on Friday, they're not going anywhere. The Texans have total control over them. And so I think you're better off traveling if indeed you're trying to keep your team together. And I'm not sure which hotel they stay at, but I know that it's one of the I do know which hotel it is, and it's one of the largest ones in Kansas City. Everybody gets their own room. There's no doubling up, so people ought to be excited with a lot of these protocols.
Oh, I just had a flashback when you said they come back at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing worse than being a football player coming back at 3 or 4 in the morning after, like, if you have a bad game on a Monday night game or something, and your hard ass coach is like, everybody go to the stadium. You're going to get a bike workout before you go home, or just Well, that happened once. Coughlin, we had to circle around because Jacksonville was fogged in after we got our asses beat in Minnesota 1 year. So we landed in Orlando, sat on the tarmac for like 2 hours, and then flew up to Jacksonville, landed at 7 in the morning, and Coughlin said everybody had to go in and get a bike workout or a treadmill workout they went home. It's crazy. It's so crazy. Oh. But, yeah, so hopefully the Texans don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. So, John, the weather, it sounds like, might be sloppy. Week one overall in the NFL might be sloppy. And, actually, I want to play this from Bradley Roby, get your reaction to it. Bradley Roby, in his press conference yesterday, with actually a little bit of refreshing honesty about what the week one football might look like.
Definitely. I think, naturally there's no preseason games. You know, a lot of teams, you know, probably have been cautious to try to tackle their own players in camp around the league. So I think that, you know, these first couple of games, it's going to be weird. You know, it's going to be preseason-like, but, you know, real stats. You know, everything's going to count. But it's going to look a little bit sloppy, you know, on both sides of the ball for everyone. I just think so, just because we haven't played against anyone else but our teammates. So I think early on, those first three games, you know, it's going to be a little bit sloppy. And then everyone to kind of get in their groove as the season goes on.
All right. Sorry about that, Bradley. John, what do you anticipate seeing? You've watched, every season of NFL football ever. What do you think is going to be different about this one from an execution standpoint?
Andy Weaver's asked the question this week about the tackling, and he said he's worried about the tackling even when they play four preseason games. So absolutely it's a concern. Neither one of these teams has tackled anybody since they played last season. The Chiefs, of course, played later than the Texans. So I would imagine there's going to be some missed tackles. I think if it's wet, that's going to make it worse for the defense. The players are going to be they're going to slip away more than they ordinarily would. And that's just an offshoot of not having preseason games. And if it's poor tackling, that usually should mean more scoring. And the NFL people love more scoring, right? So it could play right into their hands at a time when they're negotiating a new network television contract that could take them from $296 million per team to people are talking about they could possibly even double that. And so points get viewers, so it could be good for the NFL.
John, Bill O'Brien the other day said that, you know, nobody in the building had ever seen anything like this, including Romeo Crennel, who's been in the NFL for decades. They said it was the weirdest season they've ever had. Is this the weirdest season you've had? Because I feel like in the 70s, guys were doing a lot of drugs, and there was probably some pretty weird stuff going on. But this is pretty weird, like in a non-drug sense.
This is the weirdest situation there's ever been in the NFL because of things they've had to adjust stadiums, three locker rooms, multiple cafeterias. Players came back. They had to figure it out what to do. They took them a while to do it. But players are flexible. It's a game of adjustments. They're used to it. Every team has. The key is every coach has said that the players who are the most the team that is the most disciplined off the field, in other words, don't have morons like the Cleveland Indians pitchers, the ones that's most disciplined are going to be the ones that win. And I would guess if you got more married players, that's good. If I'm the veterans, I'm watching the young single guys. I think some guys have been caught in all three sports, but how many guys have done it that didn't get caught? And I would think if you have to come back and if you break the protocols and you have to answer to your team leaders, that would be a pretty strong deterrent to me to explain why you're taking money out of their pocket. So yeah, the only other season since I've been covering them now 44 years to me that was strange, like anywhere close to this, was 1987 with the strike and replacement players coming in for three-a-day practices for and playing three games that ultimately counted in the standings.
That actually feels a little bit weirder than this, just because you had an entire league of guys that weren't good enough to be in the league. And a lot of those guys weren't even good enough to be in training camps, right? Because a lot of the guys that might have a realistic shot at the NFL didn't want to cross the picket line. So you had to, John, there had to have been a couple guys that you interviewed during that period where you just were thinking the WTF, even before that was an acronym.
They took a lot of them off the street, guys that hadn't played that came for tryouts, and because they didn't, were not members of the union, the coaches could abuse them and put them out. I remember the Oilers would have 3-a-day practices. They'd be running guys in the dark, and with the Oiler players standing on a railroad track next to the facility, screaming and yelling at them, and throwing rocks and eggs at their buses, and they got their names, and they would yell their names. And then when they started playing, veteran players crossed the picket line, and the owners knew the union would never stick together, and the Cowboys were the worst team that had the most stars cross the picket line, and there was some bad blood. And one player that came from running a jackhammer on a construction site, he made the Oilers with a tryout, inside linebacker Eugene Seal, who lasted a few years as a special teams star because he made it the hard way from a jackhammer to the football field.
John, just a quick yes or no, because we're up against it. I've seen pictures of 1987 John McClain. You were damn near a stallion. Were you more athletic than at least a handful of the scab players on the 87 Oilers?
I would never. Maybe more athletic, but not as tough.
Okay, there you go. John McClain joining us on the program as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours. Really, we're down to about 35 hours of coverage between now and kickoff for the Texans and the Chiefs tomorrow. The NFL season kicks off tomorrow. Tonight, 8 o'clock, if you want to relive the Week 6 win over the Chiefs. We hope that the game tomorrow looks a lot more like that one than the playoff game. So we're replaying that one for you in a Texans radio special presentation, commercial-free, Texans Week 6 win over the Chiefs last year. So be on the lookout for that. More with John McClain. We have not gotten his reaction yet with us to Deshaun Watson's record setting deal and what it means for the Texans going forward. Is there anybody that you can compare Deshaun Watson to, John McClain, in his time of covering football in Houston when it comes to being the face of a franchise? We will ask John McClain that and a whole lot more as we roll on with him in the 8 o'clock hour. That's all next. 7:20 p.m. kickoff tomorrow. Seth and I, our first Texans Countdown show of the year, starting at 4:20. Clint Sterner and I will take you into the wee hours of what we hope is a victorious postgame show here on Sports Radio 610 against the defending Super Bowl champions. One of our guests, undoubtedly, on the pregame show tomorrow for Seth and I will be our guest right now, John McClain, who joins us in the 8 o'clock hour on Wednesdays each and every week. John on his way to Kansas City a little later on today. John, some history made for the Texans over the weekend. The Deshaun Watson contract extension finally getting done. 4 years, $160 million extension onto the 2 years he already was under contract for. So it's 6 years in the neighborhood of $170, $180 million that Deshaun's going to be making. I'm sure he'll get another extension at some point before 2025. John, he's getting paid like a guy who is a face of the franchise, can take a team to a Super Bowl, really money that would say he could carry a team to a Super Bowl. Where is Deshaun on that short list of guys who are sort of this face of a franchise, big stage moxie? That, you know, who do you compare him to guys that you've covered here in Houston in the football world?
It's actually $156 million with a max of $174, but he's not going to get the max because he'll redo it in 4 years. And it's about what everybody thought it'd be, about $40 million. He deserved to be number two to Patrick Mahomes, and he is because of the timing. The only other quarterback I've covered here who was in that situation was Warren Moon. When they signed Warren Moon, it was an unrestricted free agent coming from Canada. It was the largest contract in NFL history. Sit down for how big it was. 5 years, $5 million. Oh. And that was in 1984. And of course, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was the face of the franchise. And it was a lot of good teams they had. They came close, but like the Texans, they couldn't get beyond the divisional round of the playoffs. I covered Steve McNair his first 2 years, but Steve was a backup then behind Chris Chandler. So, and Dan Pastorini took the Oilers to consecutive AFC championship games, but the one that really stood out in that role was Warren Moon. And they had a lot of the same characteristics, more quiet leaders, very charismatic veterans gravitated to him, and I see that with Watson. And I believe that the Texans will win a Super Bowl with Watson. Don't know when it'll be, but I think he's that good.
And, of course, Tim Kelly will be the guy working with him for the first time as an offensive coordinator. Well, as a play-calling offensive coordinator. He was technically the offensive coordinator last year. John, when did you first start hearing about Tim Kelly as a potential future offensive coordinator?
Right after he moved from quality control to coaching tight ends, and he also helped with the offensive line. I remember one of the former PR guys here who's now in Denver said, who liked to come in early, said no matter how early he came in, that Tim Kelly was always there. He was always the first one there and the last to leave, and what a hard worker he was and how much he wanted to learn. And, of course, he came with O'Brien, and everybody's eager to see, you know, is there going to be a difference with Kelly? What will he play that they didn't play when Bill O'Brien was a play caller the year that George Godsey did it? Brian Hoyer was a quarterback, so that's not – you can't really compare that. And it's not just him, Anthony Weaver too. How many teams do you see coming off the second round of the playoffs who have three new coordinators? That is rare.
I guess let's see – the Rams kept their Super Bowl. The Rams fired everybody last year because Sean McVay couldn't fire himself. Even though the special teams and the defense were not the issue, the offense was the issue, but somehow Wade Phillips is out of a job. So, it's a really good point, John. And I feel like Tracy Smith, in a way, kind of gets off the hook, at least publicly, because, for one, people ignore special teams to begin with, and two, because the offensive and the defensive coordinator are naturally going to get a whole lot of attention, I feel like Tracy Smith has slid under the radar, but he's stepping into the role where it seems like, okay, that's a natural progression, right? He's been the assistant special teams coordinator for a long time with Brad Seeley. Is it too much to think that it should just be an automatic transfer and there wouldn't be too much of a lag?
I would guess that's the case. You know, they're special teams. I've never seen special teams make great plays to help build a 24-0 lead and then awful plays to help blow it, like the special teams did last season in that divisional playoff game. And Tracy Smith been with Brad Seeley for, I think it was 11 years, and so he is a kind of a chip off the old block, even though his dad, Carl Smith, a longtime offensive coordinator, now is an offensive consultant. But I don't think we're going to see much change. You know, they brought in more special teams players like Michael Thomas, who's been one of the best in the NFL. So all the specialists are back. So I look for them to be among the league leaders for the second year in a row.
John, we can kind of close the book, at least on the money part of the DeAndre Hopkins trade, because he agreed to an extension yesterday. They tacked 2 years onto his deal in Arizona for $54.5 million, about $42 million of that guaranteed. So he's now sitting on a five-year contract worth a total of $94 million if he plays things out under this deal. Now that we know those numbers, how does that affect your view of the Hopkins trade, or does it affect your view of it at all?
Doesn't affect it at all. The reason Arizona made the trade, they had no reservations about giving him a new deal with 3 years left. A lot of teams did because they had players that they were worried about. And so I'm happy for him. I was on an Arizona talk show yesterday, and I go, man, he negotiated himself. I said, he didn't negotiate this himself. He had the same three people that Tunsil did helping him as advisors. And those guys now, they're going to get a lot more attention because they don't cost as much as an agent. And I would imagine the deals that they did for Tunsil and Hopkins going to help them get a whole lot more business. And I'm really happy for Hopkins to get it because he had told me for 2 years he was underpaid and he wanted to get a better contract, and now he did. Good for him.
Who are those three guys, John? Who are the three people that Laramie Tunsil and now DeAndre Hopkins are using as sort of much lower-cost advisors in lieu of an agent?
I can't remember their names. Aaron Wilson's written about them, and I'm not exactly sure how Laramie got with them, but they did a terrific job, and they did a terrific job for Hopkins, too. They're financial advisors, I believe, and I would imagine a lot of people are going to want to know more about them and do the same thing because both those guys fired agents from CAA, the top firm in the country.
I think it's – I don't know, John. See – I would lean more towards saying it's fair to say that they negotiated themselves, because both with Laramie and DeAndre, they were actually on the phone with Bill O'Brien and or with the people in Arizona. And, yeah, they're using those advisors for guidance and whatnot, but that's the same way. I mean, Bill O'Brien uses Jack Easterby and Kevin Krakowicz for guidance and all these things. Look, DeAndre Hopkins has a lot more experience is an important role in the NFL than Jack Easterby does, and they're letting Jack Easterby negotiate contracts by himself, supposedly.
Yeah, Easterby's negotiating contracts with Kevin Krakowicz, who's their salary cap guy. O'Brien keeps up with what's going on, and but I'll guarantee you Hopkins didn't spend a whole lot of time negotiating his contract.
John, Jadeveon Clowney, his deal is done with the Tennessee Titans. 1 year, $12 million. Could get to $15 million if he hits some incentives, including $1 million if he finally gets that elusive double-digit sack season that we've been waiting for from Clowney. John, how do you process the Clowney situation here? Did Clowney just completely misread this thing, or do you think he becomes a guy who is sort of a one-year soldier of fortune? Is this what he's going to do from now on? Miss training camp and sign a one-year deal?
That's a great way to put it, a soldier of fortune, because if it doesn't work out there, he's going to be on his fourth team in 4 years. He fired his longtime agent, Buzz Cook, again. He hired Kennard McGuire.
All the cool kids are firing their agents, yes.
Yeah, Kennard. He did not call financial advisors. Right. He called Kennard McGuire, who's one of the best in the business, and Kennard got that deal. The thing is, had Clowney signed what the Texans offered him, he'd have been making a whole lot more money. So, yes, obviously they misjudged it. They wanted $100 million. They've yet to get it. I don't think they're ever going to get that kind of money. But I hope it works out with the Titans. It's a great city. I can't wait to see Clowney and Tunsil going at it twice a year. That's going to be a great matchup, worth the price of admission in itself. And in a perfect world, Clowney stays healthy, plays great. He's been working out here for months with Danny Arnold from Plex. In my Nashville show yesterday, we had Danny on there. And it was interesting. One of the things Danny said they worked him, he said he's been healthy a long time. And one of the things they worked on him was helping him dip, to help him get around the edge more, to get more sacks. That a lot of what they did were things about trying to get the quarterback more consistently. So we'll see if it works out, because he right away is their at least their second best defensive player, and there should be great against the run as always, and a good pass rusher.
John, real quick, because we're up against it here, bottom of the hour. Do teams talk to Danny Arnold when they do their due diligence on Clowney?
Oh, yeah. Teams have been calling Danny throughout the offseason to get progress reports.
There you go. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit on the show. Hey, I want to remind you about something we're doing. We're in the midst of the world's biggest pregame show, but we're looking to include huge impact in the community in that. So really encourage you to join us in a great endeavor that just a few bucks, really, to help a kid in need. And it's for books. The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation campaign, the My Home Library campaign. To be more specific, look, books are a luxury for a lot of us, but in a lot of homes, they're not there. They're non-existent. And one book for every 300 low-income households in Houston, one out of four Houston third graders not meeting reading standards, 60% of kids entering kindergarten without the reading skills they need to succeed. A lot of that's because there's no books in the home. You can help get books in the home of a young child. $30 donation gives them the chance to choose six books. But even just a few bucks gets them a book. And it's tax deductible, and here's how you can help. HTX Reads. Text HTX Reads to 41444, and it's really easy to make your donation. I made my $30 donation yesterday. It's super easy. Text HTX Reads to 41444, and you can help a kid through the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. We appreciate that here at Sports Radio 610. More with John McClain, including some conspiracy theories that Seth Payne has. We'll get to those next. The world's biggest pregame show is going on right now, right here on Sports Radio 610, getting you ready for Texans and Chiefs. Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit in the 8 o'clock hour. Seth has some conspiracy theories that he wants to bounce off of John here in just a second that are Texans related. John, we have not talked about the Brandon Cooks quad injury yet. Stealing from Seth, I guess, briefly here, could this be the Texans playing possum with their shiny new toy? That's my conspiracy theory, that this Brandon Cooks injury is just a bunch of hogwash. They don't want any sort of intel to get out on how they're going to deploy all this speed. What's up with this Cooks quad injury, John?
He's had the quad injury since the offseason. He's been dealing with it. They took it easy on him in training camp, what they asked him to do. And he missed two games last year with concussions, and he'd been very, very durable throughout his career, so we'll see. He didn't practice yesterday. He needs guys that don't practice usually don't play, so I would imagine I have no idea if he's going to play. I just know this has been an issue since the off season, but it didn't keep him out of a lot of practices.
I would say, John, I have a couple conspiracy theories, and these aren't like completely off the wall cockamamie conspiracy theories. So we're not doing the hike your leg on it thing. I want you to tell me whether I'm completely out of line here or if there might be something to it. Okay, this one might be a little cockamamie. Colin Gillespie, who we saw used towards the end of last season very effectively in a couple instances, but who hasn't practiced this entire time that the media has been allowed in. I'm wondering, and I don't want to say this too loud in case anybody from Kansas City is listening, is there a chance they're playing possum with Colin Gillespie and they plan on unveiling a whole lot of fullback usage in this first game? And I don't know, Colin's been getting his work on the side or something.
No, he hadn't practiced because he's coming back from a knee injury. He's been a spectator, so no, I do not expect him to play in this game.
If I get 15 snaps out of Colin Gillespie, I'm coming for you next week, John. I want
you okay,
to
if you get 15,
in advance.
You just don't want to bet on it.
No, I don't. Okay. Okay, the other one I would say is this. I don't expect confirmation of this or anything, but it just makes sense to me. I wonder, since the Texans had been trying to trade DeAndre Hopkins for a while, apparently, when Bill O'Brien traded for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills, and he traded, you know, two first-rounders and a second-round pick, a pretty aggressive package, do you think part of it at that point was that he felt confident he was going to get at least one of those first-rounders back, or at least a lot more compensation from DeAndre Hopkins whenever he chose to trade him? Do you think that emboldened him a little bit with the Laremy Tunsil trade?
I don't think when he made that deal for Tunsil and Stills that Hopkins was coming off another first-team All-Pro season. I don't think he was thinking – maybe he was thinking about it, but as far as he could get back, I have no idea. We've never – talked to him about that, and he wouldn't tell us anyway. But I don't think that before last season, I think he had a lot on his mind, and I think a lot of it depended on how Hopkins played. He played great, and what he thought about his contract demands. And one reason they couldn't get a number one, most teams would not redo a contract with 3 years left, and yeah. The Cardinals had no problem with it. He didn't turn down number one pick so he could trade Hopkins to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I don't even need to debate that side of it, but I wonder if, because there were those reports that, and according to Hopkins, the Texans were trying to trade him before Hopkins ever made the contract demands. I wonder if they were on the sly trying to get the absolute maximum value for Hopkins and they thought maybe that they could have done it without these extra demands. But, yeah, like you said, I don't think we'll ever actually find out all the details.
Right.
John, what was your biggest surprise with the Texans in their cut down to 53?
Angelo Blackson was a starting end, and they cut him. Angelo just couldn't rush the quarterback. I think I saw last year he played more snaps without a sack than any guy in a defensive line. So he went to Arizona, and they moved Charles Minihu, who plays mostly left side. Got a lot of playing time last year as a rookie when Watt was out. He got a lot of playing time in practice because Watt was working on physical conditioning, and now this is Minihu's time to shine at right tackle. And then the other one, Jordan Thomas, who'd been one of the stars of training camp. Bill O'Brien told us he wanted to bring him back, but Arizona claimed him and put him on their and practice squad. They signed him to their practice squad. But if you really want somebody, would you expose them to other teams? And they still have three. So those were the two that surprised me when I heard. In fact, I was on with you, and I was bemoaning the fact that they had cut the greatest snapper in history. And you pointed out the intention was to bring him back because I'm guessing they had a deal worked out with Weeks and his agent that don't sign with another team. We're going to bring you back. We just want to be able to put a player on injured reserve, and then we'll put you back on a roster. And they did the same thing with Greg Mantz.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that the Texans openly said, well, we're planning on bringing Weeks back, because I know all the rules and restrictions are a little bit different, but I think generally the NFL frowns on those wink-wink side deals that you might have with players, a contract without actually being signed. But I don't think anybody's going to litigate those things this year because everything's so weird. The Jordan Thomas one is a little bit of a surprise to me, just because I know O'Brien said that they hope to bring him back at some point. But you're right, John. You would think, okay, then they were going to try to either sign him to the practice squad or sign him back to the active roster. Was there any indication that maybe Jordan Thomas said, all right, well, I've got an actual opportunity to play maybe, or more opportunity to play in Arizona, so I'm turning down the Texans' offer? Do you have a feeling like the Texans actually made any kind of an offer to Jordan Thomas after he cleared waivers?
I don't know. I know that O'Brien said, you know, when you say publicly you want to get, the plan is you want to bring a guy back, usually it's the truth. If I'm Jordan Thomas and I got Darren Fells and Jordan Akins in front of me, I want to go somewhere where I at least have a chance to be the backup. And so I thought that was a smart move for him to go to Arizona, because they need a lot of players.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. So, John, the Texans get the Deshaun Watson deal done. Prior to that, they got the Laremy Tunsil deal done. They got the Zach Cunningham deal done. It seems like Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby have checked off all of their to-dos for this particular offseason. I guess as we head towards the future, you know, after 2020 is over, or maybe in season like they did with Whitney last year, towards the end of last year, who is the next Texan, do you think, to get a big contract from this team?
If Will Fuller stays healthy and plays the way he's capable of playing, it would be Will Fuller. He's in the last year of his contract. The guy that I feel confident will get a new deal, because it's an extension, he has 1 year left, is Justin Reed. Justin Reed's been a really good player. He's everything O'Brien talks about. Good teammate, good guy, hard worker, productive on the field. He's become a team leader. So I would imagine it before next season, depending on what happens with the cap, you'll see Justin Reed get an extension. And, you know, Watson's contract isn't an issue the next 2 years. In 2022, when the cap should go back up and that new network television contract figures into the equation, no telling how much it'll go up over the floor they have next year of $175 million. I think it's not going to be that low because of the network TV deal, but I think at some point Watson's will be redone in 4 years. Mahomes will be redone in 4 years, and those guys want to play into the 40s, and someday they'll look back and be surprised that they actually accepted contracts as low as 45 and 39 million a year.
Hell yeah, chump change. Yeah.
Remember Warren Moon's contract. Get out of my face, you peasant. Remember that was record-setting, 5 years, $5 million. People were stunned that a guy would get that kind of money.
Yeah,
John, Von Miller injured his ankle on the last play of practice yesterday. He's likely out for the year. And it got me to thinking about this season compared to maybe the 2011 lockout season. In the 2011 lockout season, there hadn't been any OTAs, but then they went on to have a pretty normal training camp, and there were a lot more injuries. It feels like there hasn't been this drastic onslaught of injuries as of yet, but they also haven't had preseason games or combined practices or anything like that. Do you think, should we brace ourselves in these first couple of weeks for perhaps more injuries than we'd expected, because guys aren't generally conditioned the same way as they usually are?
Seth, I believe we should brace ourselves for a lot of injuries. We've talked so much about COVID-19 and the possibility of teams having outbreaks, and they've done a phenomenal job of controlling that so far. But when it comes to injuries, they always have them, and I'm guessing there'll be more. There were more in 2011, and I'm thinking they keep track of all this stuff. I think it's going to be an injury plague season, just for the reasons you mentioned.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. It's the world's biggest pregame show here on Sports Radio 610, getting you ready for the Chiefs and the Texans on Thursday night, a game that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. We're also playing the Week 6 win from last year over the Chiefs in Arrowhead, commercial-free tonight at 8 o'clock in a Texans radio special presentation. John, obviously we want tomorrow night's game to look a whole lot more like that Week 6 win than we do the playoff game. What are the biggest keys in your mind to the Texans coming out of Arrowhead with a win tomorrow night? What are you going to be looking for?
They won that game last year because they controlled the ball for almost 40 minutes. They ran the ball for 192 yards and three touchdowns. Carlos Hyde had 116 yards. And they had the bigger time of possession in the playoff game, too. But Patrick Mahomes threw eight touchdown passes. So in a game up there, despite controlling the ball for almost 40 minutes, they still won by seven. Mahomes threw for three. So the best way to play the Chiefs is keep Mahomes on the bench, whether you're running the ball or you're throwing short passes. And then when you get in the red zone, you got to be effective. They were good in the red zone last year, one of the top teams, but they were the worst red zone defense in the NFL when it came to allowing touchdowns and when it came to allowing points. They were just awful, and they were awful against the run, and they were awful on third down. So Anthony Weaver has got his hands full on his side of the ball, where Tim Kelly has an advantage because he has Deshaun Watson and a lot of good receivers, including the Johnsons.
John, one guy we've been hearing a whole lot about is AJ Moore. I think both from the coaches and then from you guys covering, it seems like he's had a really good camp. My fear is this, and this is, I'm not blaming the coaches if this happens, but the coaches don't have anybody to actually evaluate these guys against, and I'm a little bit nervous going into this game that guys like AJ Moore or perhaps guys like Lonnie Johnson are entrusted to do more than maybe they're ready to do. I mean, I guess, and I don't, there's not really an answer you can have for me other than I need you to go ahead and over the phone give me whatever the verbal equivalent of a reassuring hug is. I need you to hug me and tell me it's going to be all right.
Well, I can't do that considering how bad the defense was last year. Lonnie, one of the things I went by on Lonnie Johnson, he was running with the first team for last couple of weeks because Conley was second team. And then is how much smarter he is in his second season, which he should be. They trust him enough to play corner and safety. And I don't know if he's going to be considered the third safety or A.J. Moore will be considered the third safety. But the coaches were really happy with him based on what he did mentally. Anthony Weaver said, yes, you couldn't hit people so to make tackles, but you worked on their angles and decisions they made and when they got to the ball and how they got to the ball. And then Moore, I went by on Moore. Number one, he's a former cornerback, and he is really fast. We talk about the fast receivers. A.J. Moore is really fast. And he made a lot of plays. Like, I remember one time Jordan Thomas, who made a lot of catches, 6'5", 277, taking the ball away. One time he went up, he had the ball in his hands, squeezing the ball, and Moore just came in there and stripped it. And when Moore fell away, Thomas was looking at his hands like, what in the hell just happened? And then you'd see Moore making diving interceptions, and you'd see him just going all out. And of course the coaches love it, but he's very inexperienced. You know, he's a gunner on the punt coverage, and he's a really good special teams, but I'm guessing they're going to use more corners instead of three safeties. They're putting a lot of faith in Eric Murray. He didn't show that kind of faith in Cleveland and Kansas City. Big game for him going back to Kansas City. But I'd like to see Moore get more playing time just because he worked so hard and made so many plays in camp.
It's John McClain.
That was a good. He gave me a good. That was a verbal hug. I feel better about it now.
Okay,
thank you, John.
There you go. Good
That's
job.
Good info.
Yeah. John, we appreciate it as always. John joins us each and every week on Wednesday. John, I would imagine a ton of NFL preview stuff going on in the Chronicle this weekend.
Yeah, we've got stuff all day, every day. I'm working on my preview page for tomorrow, and we'll have three people, me, Aaron Wilson, and Brian Smith, and our extraordinary photographer, Brett Coomer, will be there too, bringing back all the coverage, and I will be on the pregame show at 6:30, I'm told. Guys, thank you very much.
All right, John, thank you as well. We look forward to talking to you on the pregame show tomorrow as Seth and I get you ready for Chiefs-Texans tomorrow night. Of course, we're getting you ready throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610, not just throughout the day, throughout the evening hours and the morning hours as well, through the night, through the overnight here. It's all Texans all the time. Texans, Chiefs, the world's biggest pregame show, getting you ready for the Chiefs and the Texans as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. And we mentioned the new deal for DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins, Jadeveon Clowney, the book closed now on both of them financially. We evaluate the job that each did in trying to get their goals accomplished with their new contracts. We do that in the 9 o'clock hour. Next, you're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.